On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this is Bob Keebler, and joining me today is Jonathan Blockmacher to discuss the federal tax aspects of decanting. Jonathan, previously we discussed the property law aspects of decanting in another podcast, and you indicated there were also substantial tax advantages of decanting and potentially tax implications that can easily be missed by practitioners. Now, the IRS has issued Notice 2011-101 regarding the tax aspects of decanting. Help us out, Jonathan. What is the IRS looking for here, and have they ever weighed in on decanting before?
Well, Bob, the IRS has weighed in decanting many, many times. There are a series of private letter rulings going back to 1997, when I got the first, I believe, decanting ruling, where we wanted to add spendthrift provisions to a trust. And it was a huge trust. It was grandfathered from generation-skipping transfer tax. And we didn't want to take any risk that we were going to lose grandfathering from that trust. So we went in, and the service issued 9737024, in which it said adding a spendthrift provision in the trust so the beneficiary's interest in the trust could no longer be subject to attachment by the beneficiary's creditors would not cause any adverse tax effect, not income, not estate, not gift, not generation skipping. It's issued a series of them since then, but it's dependent upon, I think, the facts. And indeed, in Notice 2011-101, the IRS has listed over a dozen areas where it's asked practitioners for guidance about what the tax aspects of a decanting action would be.
So, Jonathan, what are we concerned about? I mean, I know there could be income tax issues, gift tax issues, potentially estate tax issues, and certainly GST issues. Can you kind of walk us through that?
Certainly. One of the issues, if you're just making administrative changes, there's a private letter ruling 2013-015, 2013-015, where basically the IRS has said if you're just making administrative changes, there won't be any income, estate, gift, or generation skipping transfer tax consequences to that. And that's consistent with many prior positions the Internal Revenue Service has taken with respect to reformations and with respect to decanting as well. But sometimes the interest of the beneficiary is going to change. And one of the things that the IRS wants to know, what if the beneficiary's right to property from the trust, whether it's income or principal, has changed? For example, let's assume again that the trust is going to have a payout to the beneficiary of all the corpus when she's 35 years old, and she's now 34. And for a variety of reasons, or just for one reason, for example, she is being the subject of a lawsuit, and if these assets come out of the trust, once they get into her hands, her creditors can attach them. The trustee decides, I'm going to decant the trust and extend the terms of the trust for her entire lifetime. Well, she was entitled to the income at age 35, and now the trustee is not going to let her have it at 35. It's going to continue for her life. Is there some, for example, income tax consequences, perhaps under the famous cottage savings case decided by the Supreme Court about 10 years ago, in which the court indicated that if a taxpayer's interest in property changed even slightly, the taxpayer would be treated as though she had exchanged it for other property. In addition, the IRS might say, beneficiary, you made a gift. You were entitled to this property at 35. You're no longer getting it at 35. And as a consequence, we're going to say you made a gift. Well, I don't think it's as simple as saying, gee, she lost it, she's made a gift, because she has not, in my judgment at least, made a transfer. I think the only way she could be treated as making a gift is if she could have definitely stopped the trustee from extending the term of the trust, the time she would get the property. What I've always done where I've extended the trust is to give the beneficiary a special testamentary power of appointment. Because if the trust is exclusively for my benefit, even if I was entitled to it at 35, and even assuming that my failure to stop the trustee from extending the trust was somehow a gift by me, by giving me a testamentary special power of appointment, even if it's exercisable with the consent of a non-adverse party, renders that gift incomplete. so we don't have to worry about an immediate gift tax consequence. Now, another one is whether you've added a new beneficiary. Let's suppose under the decanting statute, and I'm not sure that any of them permit it, let's say the trust, Bob, is just for you. But, for example, the trustee says, Bob, I'm going to pay it to a non-trust in which the beneficiaries are not just you, but your descendants as well. Is there any consequence to that? And in most of these cases, Bob, I think if there is a consequence to you, it's only if you had the power to stop the trustee from doing it. And even if you had that power, Bob, I'm not sure that it would go ahead and be a gift by you if it wasn't certain you could get it done, because you might decide this is a small trust. It'll cost me more to undo what the trustee's trying to do than the value of what I've got. And that would tend to me to mean that you fall under the gift tax exception for an ordinary course of business judgment. You're not trying to transfer something. You're just trying to avoid basically what would be an adverse effect. Another case is where you've taken a trust that, say, is not a grantor trust, so the trust is paying its own income tax, or the beneficiaries are on the distributable net income distributed to them, and we convert it to a grantor trust. So it's now going to be taxed to the grantor. Is there some tax consequence to that? Or, for example, if it's a grantor trust and you decant into a non-grantor trust, that you get a different result. Another question is whether or not changing the location or situs or governing law of one trust through decanting to another, for example, you go from Wisconsin to Delaware, or you go from Georgia to Florida, is that going to be some sort of taxable event? It appears under some generation skipping regulations issued more than 10 years ago that would not have adverse effect, but the IRS has asked for comments. The IRS has also asked for comments that if you need the permission of the beneficiaries to decant, or you need the permission of a court to decant, are there some tax effects? And what happens if you go, for example, from a state which allows the trustee to do certain things, but you go to a state where the trustee can't, or vice versa? So that's there. And kind of the big issue, and the one that people have been somewhat concerned about, is if you have a trust that's grandfathered from the generation skipping transfer tax by reason of its effective date, basically pre-1986 trust, if you decant, under what circumstances are you going to lose that grandfathering? So there are a lot of issues that really the service would like guidance on. And in the notice, they also say that even though they've issued about a dozen private letter rulings in the past, they will no longer issue private letter rulings until they've decided what their position is going to be with the various tax aspects of decanting.
So, Jonathan, I can see a lot of opportunity here, especially let's say you're in a state that does not have a flight provision. You might be able to decant and move to a state where there's no income tax on trusts. But in light of 2011-101, does anyone dare decant a trust until the IRS comes out with some guidelines?
Well, that's a great question, Bob. And I think, again, that in most circumstances, you will find sufficient guidance either in writing. Diana Zadel and I wrote an article, I believe it's in the December 2009 issue of the Journal of Taxation, about the tax effects of decanting, which would spell it out. And we think that there are some areas where you can safely proceed with decanting, but there are other areas where it's not quite so certain. Certainly, if you're making what I will call administrative changes, I think it's okay. But again, you can't go in and get that comfort ruling from the IRS that everything is okay. Now, there are bar groups that are making comments even before this notice came out, because the service had unofficially asked for comments. So it might be that by the end of 2012, the service will tell us its position. It wants comments by the end of this coming April, so it would have about 8 months to decide what it wants with decanting. And we're anticipating there'll be a regulation or perhaps a revenue ruling. And with the bar groups have asked for certain safe harbors. Tell us which acts of decanting will not cause adverse effects. But maybe they'll even go further and say, but if you do the following things, then you will have adverse effects. As I said, Bob, if you're concerned about the beneficiary making a gift, what you need to do, I think, is to give the beneficiary a special power of appointment which would render any such gift incomplete. And again, if you're worried that the beneficiary will exercise it in a manner which is not consistent with what the family would want, the trustee can say to the beneficiary, you can exercise this special power, but only with the consent of a non-adverse party, such as a non-adverse trustee. That is, a trustee who's not a beneficiary and doesn't have a beneficial interest in it. That would prevent the beneficiary from exercising it in an inappropriate manner, but it would also render the gift incomplete.
Jonathan, this has been very interesting. How long do you think it would take the government to come back and give us some guidance in this area?
Bob, I'm hoping they will come back before the end of 2012. One very, very famous estate planning lawyer said to me 4 years ago, Jonathan, your decanting statute, which was the first one ever drafted, which I drafted for New York, which is Estates, Powers, and Trust Law 10-6.6, said to me, Jonathan, your decanting statute is the most important law passed in my career. And it really is, Bob, a tremendously powerful tool. It allows you to correct mistakes that you've made. It allows you to secure the estate, gift, or income tax consequences of what you want. For example, you may have a trust that can't be a qualified subchapter S trust. You probably could decant it into becoming one. You may have a trust, as I mentioned, where the insured is given, say, an incident of ownership, which would cause the proceeds of the policy owned by the trust to be includable in her estate. Well, you can decant to avoid that. You can give a special power of appointment so that the beneficiary can decide who will get the property when she dies rather than having the default takers receive that property. Now, some people might say, my gosh, Jonathan, through decanting, you're changing the entire disposition screen that the original property owner who created the trust set up. But remember, decanting only applies where there is a power to give the property to the beneficiary. So, Bob, if your mother creates a trust for you, and I'm the trustee, and it says, Jonathan, you can give the principal to Bob. Well, I can give the principal to you, Bob. You can leave it to anybody in the world. You can do whatever you want with it. Give it to charity, your friends. You can consume it yourself. You can invest it in municipal bonds. You can do anything. Well, if I can give you the power to do all those things directly, decanting allows me to do it indirectly while keeping it in the wrapper of a trust, which, you know, provides great creditor protection, provides income tax opportunities, and certainly provides the greatest opportunity to reduce estate gift and generation skipping transfer tax.
So let's just say I have a client here in Wisconsin with a trust that was created by their father or grandfather. The trust is GST exempt, and for whatever reason, everyone agrees that there's a weakness in the trust. We would start with perhaps moving the jurisdiction of that trust, the situs of that trust, to, say, Alaska or perhaps Delaware. And then what would happen, Jonathan, on the decanting side?
Well, if it's moved to Alaska and done consistent with a statute, Alaska statute 1336-157, if you do that, then the trustees are definitely, certainly going to have the Alaska decanting statute, which is a very, very broad one. And then they'll be in a position to make those changes. Now, one of the things you want to make sure is that you do not exercise the power in a manner to cause grandfathering to be lost. The regulations under 26.2601-1 provide guidance as to what type of changes, whether it happens through decanting, through reformation, through amendment, or otherwise, will cause decanting to be lost. Generally, if you are not introducing a younger generation of beneficiaries of the trust, for example, this trust for your benefit, Bob, which is grandfathered, is supposed to go to your children when you die, but it's decanted, so it doesn't go to your children, it goes to your grandchildren. You're probably going to lose grandfathering. Let's assume the trust said, Bob, it's going to be paid out to you when you're 55. Now, the trustee exercises it, so it's going to stay in trust for your entire life. That, because you're extending the term of the trust, is going to cause grandfathering to be lost unless local law had decanting by common law. There was no state that had a decanting statute when the generation skipping transfer tax rules of the 1986 Tax Reform Act came out. And what the IRS has stated in the regs, only if you had decanting in the trust or under state law at the time the trust was created, can you use decanting to extend the term of the trust? If you do it otherwise, you're going to lose grandfathering. Well, matter of Phipps, a 1940 Florida Supreme Court case, said under common law, a trustee who could invade could decant to another trust, extending the terms of the trust and granting the beneficiary a special power of appointment so he could appoint the property when he died to different beneficiaries than those named as the default remainder beneficiaries of the trust. So under Florida law, it would appear that you could decant a grandfather trust, and as long as you don't extend the term beyond the normal rule against perpetuities, you won't lose it. It's arguable that that common law exists under the law of every state. There's a similar case in New Jersey, though not exactly on point, but it's consistent. In fact, when New York adopted its decanting law in 1991, the legislature stated specifically, this is declaratory of existing common law. So it's arguable you could do it there. However, Bob, dealing with a grandfather trust, the adverse effects are so bad if you lose grandfathering that I would approach it with the greatest of caution.
So there are many opportunities here. I think the really important thing that you brought out is that if you have a relatively straightforward administrative decanting, you shouldn't be afraid of that. But as you reach further and further out to extending the trust or adding beneficiaries or getting beneficiary consents, that's where we start to see more tax implications. And in those situations, Jonathan, would you just wait until the government's willing to rule?
Well, Bob, I would probably wait until the government ruled unless you can convince yourself that you can block those adverse effects. For example, the trustee might say that I'm going to extend this trust, say, beyond age 50, but only if it causes no adverse consequence, which you'd state out. So you would state in the decanted trust, the new trust, this trust shall terminate when Bob Keebler is 50, on the earlier of when Bob Keebler is 55, or the last date in which the trust would not lose grandfathering protection or would not cause Bob to experience income or Bob to be treated as making a gift. So it may be through careful drafting that you could go ahead and safely go forward if you don't want to wait until the IRS comes out with its guidance, which again I hope will be by the end of next year.
Jonathan, once again, this has been a fascinating review of the tax aspects of decanting, and we really want to thank you for that. So on behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this has been Bob Keebler with Jonathan Blockmacher discussing the federal tax aspects of decanting. Thank you for joining us today.